I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hi, everyone.
And today we are doing All About Goats, Part 2.
Yes.
About a couple weeks back, we interviewed Greg Bernhardt and Hannah Sessions from Blue Ledge Farm, and we also interviewed the folks over at Big Picture Farm in Vermont to talk about goat dairy and spring on a dairy farm and what that means in terms of milk and cheese making and all the craziness that goes along with kidding, which is
right we're in the middle of right now, which is why, you know, the episode probably felt a little rushed, so we felt we should do another one and kind of cover more wonderful goat information.
It's true. And it's very appropriate to do the second show because today we're not going to talk about goat dairy. We're actually going to talk about goat meat because people don't realize, a lot of people, that in order to get milk to make cheese, an animal has to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I myself was ignorant of this the first time that I went up to Cato Corner Farm for my internship.
Just like humans.
Yeah, just like humans, just like people. Who would have thunk it? And I turned red like a beet. And but so I feel like unless you've grown up on a farm or have some knowledge of agriculture, it's a common thing to, you know, sort of skip over in your mind.
Yeah.
But so got to have babies to have milk. Babies, you know, on a dairy farm, you know, you want to keep the girls, obviously, or most of them, because they're going to become replacement milkers in years to come. But the males, whether they be, you know, goats, you know, sheep or cows, are a different story. And so we're going to be talking with two really great guests today, Johnny Hunter of the Underground Food Collective in Madison, Wisconsin, and then also Aaron Fairbanks, who is with Heritage Foods USA here in New York, to talk about goat meat and what's being done with goat meat, because it's a delicious, delicious food. It's the world's most commonly consumed meat, although we don't eat a lot of it here in America. And so we're just going to be talking about what are some, you know, of the ways that chefs and home cooks are, you know, approaching this issue. So Johnny, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Cool. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about Underground Food Collective, the dinners that you guys do, and then the restaurants that you guys are opening this year?
Sure. So Underground's a collective of cooks, out here in Madison, Wisconsin. We've been doing some types of events or food-related things for about 10 years now. It's hard to really define what exactly that means. But we've been to New York almost 7 times now, I think, where we have done kind of pop-up restaurants or taken over a restaurant or done some kind of event at a farm or a nonprofit. So we basically just do a meal centered around some kind of theme or ingredients and sell tickets.
And on your website now, I see that the next one coming up, for instance, on April 8th, you guys are doing rabbit.
Yep, so we are doing a rabbit dinner on Easter.
That makes sense. Everybody gets to have a little bit of the Easter bunny for themselves.
Yeah,
exactly.
Even when you're an adult.
Yeah. And so you guys are opening 2 restaurants this year?
Maybe we'll just talk about one for now.
Okay, one restaurant, one at a time.
Yeah. So yeah, we're opening a new restaurant. Hopefully this summer. We had a restaurant that we lost in a fire last year, but we are in the process of reopening that. We're going to be doing that in east side of Madison, small place, kind of inspired by whole animal cooking and butchery. So
that's fantastic. And is the name of it, is it going to be called Underground Food Collective, or does it have a different name?
It's the first time a business that we have is going to have a new non-underground name attached with it. We're actually going to call it the four quarter. So the butchering term, the front half of the animal, or front quarter of the animal.
Ah, very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, everyone who wants to, you know, keep up with these guys, then you can check out Four Quarter in a few months. So about goats, we got into this conversation the last time you guys did one of your dinners here in the city. And I believe it was brought up by the fact, didn't you have some goat charcuterie that you brought with you?
Yeah. And we did three courses with goat last time. We were there. One was a charcuterie. We did two ways with it, a salami and then also a copa, and then we also did a porchetta as the main course. So.
Yum, which people obviously always think of as being pork, but you know, equally delicious with goat. And what inspired you guys to try a goat-centric dinner?
This is kind of a long story, but
we got time.
Make sense of it. So the goat has become more fashionable to cook with, I think, especially with creative cooks, just because it's different flavor, it has interesting cuts, and it presents a lot of new possibilities. But it's been hard to source quality goat, and it tends to be really expensive, and farmers who do raise it for meat tend to want to sell it into farmers markets because the premium is so much higher than into the restaurant market. So we were working with some farmers to do goats for us directly, and that just wasn't happening. And randomly, I got an email from one of the kind of important people from the state who was like, hey, we have a proposal for you about we want to do a grant with you guys so that you can use goat meat from kids. And so we set up this meeting, and They had this big long thing about wanting to do a grant, and I was just like, let's not do a grant. I just want to start buying goats from you. Like, tell me where I can buy the goats.
The grant is usually, like the intermediary step that, it's like, is this going to work in the market? But that's the beauty of a chef or an entrepreneur. You're like, no, we'll just start buying them. It's cool. Yeah. We'll make it work.
I was like, you can get me goat meat? I'll take like 50 tomorrow. So, it just basically, you've kind of explained the process there, but, having the kids in the herd, farmers are really stuck because they don't know how to market it. Most of the cheese farmers don't want to deal with another business.
And it is a whole other business.
Yeah. Maybe in the past, I think that people have expected goat meat to taste a lot like lamb meat. And so, they do want them, restricted movement. They want, that tender, milk-fed goats. And if you're a dairy farmer, that the cost on that is just too high, because any milk that you're giving to the animal, you're not selling.
Right.
Yeah. Or turning into cheese. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was just like, have them on pasture, feed them some grain, I'll buy them. And what has worked really well for us is that we have this salami business and sausage company. And with that, you don't necessarily need that tenderness that you're going to serve. At a fine dining establishment.
That's a good point.
So, immediately we've experimented with a lot of different animals in the salami, and, I think pork and goat are just perfect together.
Little barnyard match made in heaven.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever cooked a dish that didn't have some kind of pork fat with goat, It's just always... always a match that we use. So we have a goat sausage, our salami that we produce. It's probably our most popular one.
Wow.
And it's like just some like warmer spices like cardamom and cinnamon and, kind of get that Christmas feel. And then we just add about 25% pork fat, and we do like a sosiso, we call it a goat sec. So that product just kind of took off for us, and immediately there was a high demand for it, and it was really exciting. And then we just started developing more with it because the access to goat we have is, you know, Wisconsin, I think, is the largest goat milk producing state.
I want to say you're right. Yeah, goat and sheep, I think, as well.
Yeah,
there are tons of dairies.
Yeah.
So the farms that you're working with, how many farms are you working with, and do you have interest from, you know, a ton more farms? Do you plan to sort of really expand your production this year?
Yeah, we are going to expand the production. Right now, we're probably doing about 10 goats a month, and this is just for our meat processing. I think once we reopen our restaurant and we do a lot of catering, we'll start producing a very much higher volume. It is a little bit difficult to figure it out because you never know the sizes. We deal with about 8 different farms, and the biggest struggle with them is finding a slaughter facility that's nearby.
Sure. Yeah, it seems like it's the dilemma that everybody faces out here too.
Yeah, but there's like 3 in our region, so it's not the hugest problem, but it's just a logistical thing that we have to work out. And
well, and goats, I'm sure, are low on the totem pole when it comes to, and if a farmer doesn't have an existing relationship with a facility like that, then I know to like to even book a date for a slaughter can be really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and luckily some of the producers here have just been around for a while. Wisconsin is pretty far ahead on the meat processing. We have like 236 state licensed facilities. So
wow.
So we're lucky that way. But the process is just it's taking time to figure out. And luckily, I have this one guy who farms and does the goats. He has just gone out of his way to organize this all for me. So, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the goats on his farm. He'll find a friend who has a friend, or, you know, and so he's doing a legwork of, you know, someone who would be a middleman normally in this whole process of making my life easier. And they're just happy because I think that one thing that these farmers struggle with is just they want their work to go towards something, you know. They just don't want to sell it into the market that they're only getting pennies on the dollar for, or they don't just want to kill them animals, you know, which happens sometimes. And so they are so excited that someone is actually doing something with their product.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, and so can you talk a little bit about the financials? Like, what would that mean, you know, for a farmer? How much can they sell, you know, their goats for? If you're comfortable talking about it. If not, that's totally fine.
It's a steal for us. I end up paying about $1.50 a pound, and that includes all the slaughtering costs.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and it kind of works out. I'm sure the price will have to go up as soon as. I mean, I haven't actually really told anybody this is how much I pay for it.
But hey, it's better than losing money, like you said, you know, making pennies. So that's great.
Yeah, and I think that they're really happy with the arrangement. But I think when other people catch on to the price, they'll go for it. But I mean, it is working really well on that level. And you know, I think because of the number of goats in Wisconsin, there's always going to be kind of this process in which the access to the product is good. But I mean, one thing, just back to products that we do with it and why we is that, you know, generally I think there's a lot of, you know, you only need to use like lamb, or your veal has to be like, you know, held in cages. Everything has to be really tender. And I think that Underground's kind of moved away from a lot of these prenoms about how our food should be, or the texture sometimes, the tenderness is the be-all. And we were just like, well, we're just going to cut them like chops and see how they turned out. And they were good. And then I was like, well, I've been doing a lot of porchettas with pork. Let's just try it with every animal that we have access to. And that's been really good. Actually, I didn't mention earlier, but another product that we do that was really popular at the restaurant was goat bacon, which is basically, we just do a roulade with the belly, cure the belly, roll it, smoke it, cook it, and slice it real thin, and man, that product, like, still people, like, email us, like, where can we buy goat bacon? And
yeah. Oh, man, that is so great. So it's really just a matter of you guys being creative and being able to use the whole animal, of course, helps a lot. Because with a small animal and with a lot of diverse little parts, as you say, you know, there's kind of the potential is endless.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's just really been a wonderful animal for us to work with. And this whole process is just, you know, we've done this with veal, too. Andy at Uplands, you know, he raises about 6 or 8 veal for us a year. And it's the same type of thing, whereas it's like, you know, they just would have to sell off the steers, you know, for nothing.
And those are such high-quality animals.
Yeah.
And Andy Hatch of Uplands Cheese Company, they make Pleasant Ridge Reserve and Rush Creek. They've been on the show with us before, too. So it's great. It's just kind of about establishing those relationships then and you know, establishing, you know, the trust with the farmers and the farmers trusting you and getting the, you know, getting everything kind of to spec over a couple, you know, over a matter of years.
I didn't talk to the farmer who did the goats. I didn't meet him until, like, maybe 2 months ago, and we've been doing this well over a year.
Wow.
It's just, like, just this was all just coordinated via email, and the goats would show up at the slaughter facility. I would pick them up. We'd send a check. You know, like,
yeah.
And we would talk about it, you know, and he was just like, this is really great, but, you know, he's so busy, we're so busy, he didn't have a time to come see the facility until not that long ago, so.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. Well, we are actually at the halfway point of the show, we're going to have to sign off. We're going to be talking with Aaron Fairbanks from Heritage Foods USA about their goat project, but it's so interesting to hear what you guys have been up to, and it's great to know that people are appreciating the goat.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk soon.
But Uncle Sam called, he called him up, send him out to Vietnam. That young man got his life turned upside down, turned his smile into a frown, robbed that king of his crown for an ideal he didn't even know about. He was gambling at the wagon when that army man showed up, and he flashed that pen and paper, and old Fluky, he signed up. It's gonna be a big time in the jungle, gonna be a firefight, gonna be a rumble, send me out to Vietnam. I'll fight 10 men, I got nothing left in the States for me. I wanna see the world, you see. I know that Uncle Sam needs me to fight for an idea I know nothing about.
So we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Sophie Schlesinger is our producer and co-host extraordinaire. And today we're talking about goats, but we're talking about goat meat, not goat cheese. Because to have one, you got to have the other.
Yep.
So our second guest is Aaron Fairbanks from Heritage Foods USA, and Aaron is the force behind No Goat Left Behind, which was an initiative that Heritage started last year. But I'm going to let her tell you about it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on today, Anne.
Thanks for being on.
And I have to give credit where credit is due. A brilliant idea for No Goat Left Behind was, of course, yours. And it was really a project where we decided to try and sell 50 male dairy animals to chefs in New York City, San Francisco, and a couple spots in between. So last May, we started reaching out to farmers and looking in particular at dairy animals and trying to partner with some new farms. We ended up partnering with 15 different family farms selling goats into over 70 restaurants, and it was super exciting. Everywhere you went throughout the month of October, I think the streets rang with cries of goat. We were pretty happy with the response.
You guys renamed October.
Yeah.
To Goat-tober.
October.
which I love. I think, you know, just like everything has a month. Like I just learned that April is National Grilled Cheese Month. You know, October should be National Goat Appreciation Month.
I support that. Who, do I have to sign something?
we'll just make up something. We'll just draft something up and have everybody here in the studio sign it, and then I'm sure that'll be legit.
Yeah.
Hear ye, hear ye.
So let me ask you this. Is it, well, first of all, I guess the relationships with the farms, how did that go? Were people skeptical? Were people ready to jump on board? What were some of the challenges you faced in finding the farms?
It was interesting. We ended up working with farms all across the spectrum. We at the small end, work with a woman whose daughter was raising, you know, a handful of goats in her backyard as a 4-H project, to working with a farmer who grows goats to produce milk for Vermont cheese and butter. So we caught a little bit of everything between. I think, you know, what really stood out about all the farmers we worked with is everyone was very entrepreneurial, kind of willing to take a chance. You know, Heritage didn't have a relationship with any of these farmers prior, you know, at least, a purchasing relationship prior to the program. So everyone was just kind of on board to try something new. It's a very, like, handshake agreement, and we were learning as we go. I know I definitely didn't start the project with any special knowledge of goats. I think, you know, some challenges that came up, one would be, language was big. Kind of most people who are selling goats per meat are used to selling them into a live market. So when they're thinking about getting paid, they're thinking about getting paid on the live weight, which is how much the animal weighs before it goes into slaughter. But when you're in the other end of the meat business, you know, we often work with hanging weight, so that's the animal after, you know, it's been slaughtered. So there was some communication snafus in the beginning as we, you know, tried to get some of those kinks ironed out. But overall, I think, you know, the communication issues were really just basic ones of us learning a little bit more about goats and the farmers learning a little bit more about us. But I'd say across the board, everyone was a real champ, and it was super fun to get to work with so many great farmers.
That's great. And I know that places like Consider Bardwell Farm are now actually incorporating some different genetics into their herd because they want to embrace this project and continue with it and, you know, have a goat that produces a lot of milk, but that also is sturdy and has a little bit more meat on it. So it seems like farmers are really, you know, behind it and want to see this project continue.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of amazing with all the goat that's consumed in the U.S. that it's still a struggle for a lot of farmers, in particular in the Northeast, to find an outlet for their animals. I mean, I know last year alone, I think the United States imported over 17 million pounds of goat from Australia and New Zealand, and that's just kind of a shame when there's so much great stuff right here in our backyard.
Yeah. Wow. That's an astonishing number, 17 million pounds. That's a lot of goat.
Yeah.
So what was it like on your end as far as the salesperson? So you're dealing with the farmers.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Was it a hard sell to the chefs or was everybody just ready to go and experiment?
I think overall people were game. You know, there was definitely like levels of participation. Some restaurants were really big supporters. You know, we have to give big shout outs to Minetta Tavern and the Momofuku Group, who really just kind of jumped on full board without even ever seeing a goat, and just said, "Hey, man, sign us up. We're going to take goats every week. We're gonna go goat crazy." And you know, I think across the board, it was a lot of the chefs had worked with goat maybe just a handful of times. They were kind of curious about some of the flavor profiles or carcass size for the breeds we were going to be carrying. And one of the things that was interesting is it ended up being this real reflection on how far we've come with pigs and pork. You know, now each week when we call chefs, you know, they're like, "Oh, I want a Tamworth belly and I want the Berkshire butt and I'll take a whole red wattle." They identify the pigs by breed, and that language and that understanding just doesn't exist yet for goats. So we're hoping, you know, by continuing this project in the coming years to eventually get to a point where we call a farmer up and they're asking for the special Consider Bardwell you know, genetic blend, because that's what works best for them on their menu. But that's a learning process I think is going to happen over the next, you know, 5 or 6 years as we continue to bring goat into kitchens every October.
That is so, so cool.
Yeah.
Well, and you guys did a lot of education last year. Particularly, I remember that that event that you guys did at the Astor Center, which was fabulous. Can you talk a little bit about how you went beyond selling to chefs and trying to get the public more involved with appreciating goat meat and how to cook with it?
Well, I think what we really realized is that the best way for us to, you know, support our chefs and to make it easier for them to kind of say yes to this project is to give them, and I think the public at large, kind of some tools and some information as to why they should also be engaged. So we, you know, have a relationship with Astor Center, Astor Food and Wine Center. They very generously donated some space for us to do a little outreach, and we had kind of a day of goat. We talked a little bit about goat cheese. We got to eat some goat tacos. We heard from the farmers up at Consider Bardwell Farms, Margo and Alex. But I think most exciting for people was having Chef Jacques of Palo Santo in Fort Reno in-house to demonstrate how to break down and butcher a whole goat and then go over some of the nuts and bolts of the best ways to cook different parts and kind of what to look for and to think about. And I think that's something we're hoping to do again this coming October is have a couple more events like that where people can come and we can have a little back and forth with the farmers, with the chef, and answer some questions and create a space where people can really you know, explore their goat curiosity.
Learn to utilize all the parts of the goat. And then you guys also did a fantastic video, which you can see on the Heritage Foods website, heritagefoodsusa.com, which is really kind of a cool introduction to the project. So this year, what do you think? What would you do differently than you did last year? Have you already started these conversations with the farms, or have you started to reach out to anybody?
Yeah, definitely. You know, kidding season is currently in full effect. And, you know, we've been in touch with all of the producers from last year, trying to get a sense of what's going on at their farm. I know, like, the folks at Consider Bardwell have been in full baby mania for the last month or so. But then I talked to some of the farmers we worked with a little further north up at Highwood Farms, Mark and Luce, and they are expecting to start kidding later this week. So just trying to get a sense of, you know, what's happening on the ground. You know, one of the neat things about goats is they usually have twins or triplets. And when we set about to do the program this coming October, we have decided, you know, we wanted to expand it a little bit. So we're trying to get an idea from the farmers we worked with last year, how many animals they think that they might have, or they think that they might want to, you know, say are going to go towards this project. And it's always kind of hard to tell how many goats you're going to end up with at the end of a kidding season. So we've definitely been chatting with our farmers and trying to get a sense of what's happening on the ground. And one of the benefits of that is getting to see some really cute pictures of the baby goats. Yeah,
they are very
so cute.
Absolutely. Now, what about size? I know that size, and we were talking about this with our first guest, Johnny Hunter, who is from the Underground Food Collective in Madison. It seems like there's a lot of variation in terms of size with the goats. So how do you manage that? And is that part of your conversation with the farms this year? Or is it not really an issue for you guys?
No, that's definitely an issue. You know, we last year kind of took our best guess based on our knowledge of lamb as to what size would work best in the restaurant kitchen, and we asked our farmers to try and hit those marks. And so we were looking for something, you know, in the 30 to 45 pound range. And I think we probably, over the course of the 4 weeks that we ran the program, averaged just about at 30 pounds. I think that size is really a reflection of a couple of things. One, it's the age of the animal, obviously. As they get older, they're going to get bigger. But also the breed plays a big role there. You know, boar, Kiko goats that are bred for meat are just going to put on weight and be kind of a meatier, heartier carcass within the same kind of time period as a dairy goat. Dairy goat, you know, they're really bred to put all that, you know, genetic kind of work towards milk production. But if you're unlucky enough on a goat farm to be born a male, all those, you know, you have this great kind of genetic history, but you still can't make any milk. So it can be a tough spot, and I think that's really the heart of what the program is trying to get at, is the story of dairy and the fact that, you know, to make cheese you need milk, and to get milk you need babies. And so as responsible eaters, I think that it's kind of our duty to understand and, you know, eat a little bit of goat meat here and there. But size was definitely an issue. We're definitely working to drill down on some of the ways to kind of get a little bit more consistent, get those weights up there. Tatiana Stanton, who works for Cornell Cooperative Extension, has been a great resource for us and for farmers in the region. She runs the small ruminant listserv and does a ton of kind of educating and really working with farmers as to kind of how to make positive impacts in the way their animals grow. So we'll be looking to her again, definitely, to grow with our farmers. And then I think also just sharing information that we hear that's worked well on one farm or setups they've had. You know, we're hoping, you know, that our farmers will always think of us as a resource for, you know, connections to either other farmers or industry professionals.
That's really, really great. I'm so excited that the project, you know, was such a success. A, because I love goat meat. It's delicious. And B, because I just know for these farms, it's such a boon, you know, it's extra work for sure. You know, to raise them upright, but you know, then to have, you know, that extra business year after year is a pretty substantial thing. So heritagefoodsusa.com, you can go and check out No Goat Left Behind. You can watch the video starring Aaron Fairbanks, which is great. And if you're a chef and listening, definitely get in touch. Because,
yeah, start prepping your menus for October or sooner in the future, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Aaron, for being on the show. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care, ladies.
All right, and we will see you next week on another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening.
To Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.